It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, and welcome. It's FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. I'm Sean. There's Captain Mike. What? Oh, well, you got all these mics turned off.
Yeah, you got to turn me on, man. There you turn go. Me on.
So, how what you doing? I'm doing good. But so if I'm going to set up for a not just any reindeer, but a trophy class reindeer.
Yeah.
Right? Like, how would you hunt them in the open where they may be chasing reindeer does if they, you know, once they're let off the halter, Santa lets them out? Or do you think they're going to stay in the thickets this time of year?
No, they don't get hunted but one time a year, so they'd be out in the open.
They're going to come out in the open.
Sure.
So get to where you can see.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Power lines, gas lines, stuff like that, big clear cut.
It's just one day a year they get hunted, so they don't really know what's going on.
So don't worry about that. So you wouldn't even, you're not even worried about scent control or any of that with reindeer.
No. Okay. Just get a long-range gun.
All right, there you go. So we'll just check it in as we get started this week before Christmas here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Obviously, a lot to talk about this year in the hunting side, but we'll talk and we'll do that as Chuck Sykes joins us here shortly. So head of Wildlife and Freshwater
Fisheries.
That's
always good when Chuck joins us.
It is fun and a lot to talk about with him. Plus, I can recount using I killed the first deer of 2020 last weekend. That's how sad I am, Mike Ward.
Man, that's well, I didn't kill one yet.
Well, I didn't get does. No. But I've had people out there killing does, but I've been laying off. And the total is not getting to where it needs to be.
Right.
And so I said,
time to do it.
Because I got to do it too. You know, you always
always when you shoot one, then you got to do something with it.
No, and that doesn't bother me. We get that. Yeah. But I went through the process, even though we've been talking about it on the show, you know, and I used Game Check. But I went in to drop my deer off, and they said, and it was interesting. We'll talk about this with Chuck, is how people feel about it. They said, man, I'm sorry to tell you, but you have to have a number to put on this form here to turn it. I was like, yeah, I got it.
Yeah.
He's like, really?
Well, you're the first one to ever do that.
So if you haven't heard us talk, and we will talk about this in just a little bit, that, you know, you got to game check not only bucks, but you got to game check your does, and you get this number, this confirmation number. And in the past, it just kind of sat there in your, you know, you could view your, you know, your game checked information, but never did anything with it. Well, I dropped my deer off at a processor the other day, and we've been talking about this. The processors have to have that number to be able to take your deer.
That's right.
And so, but it was funny, the attitude. They're like, I'm sorry, Mr. Sean, but we're going to have – I said, no, I got it. It's right here. Yeah. It's got it right here. So it's a pretty easy process. I just want to make sure everybody knows about it. So.
And if you give your deer to somebody –
that's right.
Which I did. I gave it to a friend of mine, a deer last week that – Dylan's buddy killed.
You got to do the same thing.
I'd give him the number for you. They could take the
taxidermist.
Yeah.
Not even the meat. If you're going to take the head and the cape there, the taxidermist, or just a head to have it boiled or whatever.
Yeah.
They got to have that number.
So when they send you that number back on your phone, don't delete it.
Yeah, it'll be you'll get a confirmation email. Plus, it's in your Outdoor Alabama app.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
So you can check it out there. All right. So, but before we get into all that hunting talk, which I love to do,
we're going to
We'll talk a little fishing here. I know in a conversation I had with Captain Bobby Apriscato.
Yeah, I know.
It's just so we got so close this year after a couple years of just not really having. Not having a delta fishing season when I'm talking about for trout, it just didn't happen.
Yeah,
it kind of was happening this year.
Getting ready,
and
right
I caught some fish. I caught some fish north of the Bayway and Causeway, not too far north. I just went. I stayed kind of close, but caught some fish. And I was, you know, stuff happening here, work and this and that, and couldn't go over the last couple weeks.
Yeah,
and then we got that and that rain here. I didn't think it was as much rain as it is. And it's not Barry's going to 5.5 or something, but it's been enough of a slug of muddy fresh water that they say it has absolutely put the brakes on. And there may be somebody who can send us a email or a note to FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors on Facebook and tell us differently. That'd be cool. But everybody I talked to said this last week, Causeway just went, meh.
Yeah. And one telltale is, too, that I know a couple of shrimpers have been shrimping in the bay.
Uh-huh.
And they've been killing the shrimp. because it's pushing it out of the delta, pushing the shrimp out of the delta, all that fresh water, and they're going out into the bay, and they're really racking up on the shrimp.
So could there be some recovery? Sure, even after the shrimp leave, if the salt stays in there, there have been years when the salt stays in the deep pockets and you can still catch them. It could recover, but it doesn't look good. I mean, January is around the corner.
Yeah.
So, but the good news is Dog River, Fowl River, Balabatry, Fish River, you know, those kind of places have been fishing.
Yeah, because that's all local.
Yeah, and it doesn't get the big
influx from up north. That's right.
So those bites have been good. So it's just, and I don't know why. It's just a creature of how I grew up. And I still like to go, and I'll jump in with Bobby sometimes, or go rarely by myself, but I'll go fish dog or fowl. It's just something about fishing the Delta, how I grew up. It's like I can go catch the same number of trout and go down to Dog River and do it sometimes, but it's just not, I don't know. I still love it. I still love it, and I'll go tomorrow if somebody's taking me. But it's just not the same. I don't know. I got a hang up of where I like to, what I like to be looking at when I'm catching trout.
It's what you're used to.
Yeah.
It's kind of like me going up to Marengo County and going deer hunting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just different. Even though you can kill a lot of deer around here, I like going up there.
Yep.
It's just like you with the Delta. You like going to the Delta. Even
but I still don't say no to Dog River or Fowl River
or Bayou. It's what you're used to.
It is. And it looks like, so we got a little tease of it this year, but didn't get a full year. But
it doesn't matter. There's still a lot of fish
to be caught.
A lot of fish to be caught.
You know, and that's one of the things that, you know, we talk about how great it is to be a sportsman and live where we do. Y'all, 12 months a year, you can find some fish that are biting.
Absolutely.
And we're not talking about offshore even. We're just talking about inshore and freshwater.
Yeah.
Let alone you start bringing offshore into the mix.
But if you're somebody like me and you, and we like bass fishing, brim fishing, speckled trout fishing.
White perch.
White perch, snapper, grouper, amberjack, bill fishing,
tuna. Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to find something to do if we got off weekend and the weather's right.
That is for sure. And we'll have to check in with Captain Wayne Miller next week, hopefully to find out if the bass fishing's holding up even with that water. So the water coming up some, I think Leroy was going to 17, 20-something at Claiborne. I hadn't studied that lately. A little bit of a flood, but a little bit of a rise. I wouldn't call it, after what we have seen the last few years, this is tolerable.
This is nothing.
This is normal stuff. It's not... You know, it's going to put sloughs, put water in sloughs and some backwater, and, you know, the low stuff's going to flood, but it's not going to be what we've seen in the past right now.
That's right.
We'll leave it at that.
Typically, January and February is when we really get that big influx.
Used to be. Yeah, and then the last few years is like end of November it started.
That's right.
On the fishing front, so that's kind of what I got on the fishing front. Talking about the deer woods, and we're going to talk more about this with Chuck Sykes in just a second. I'm seeing scrapes everywhere. I'm seeing little bucks giving it hell.
Yeah.
The does aren't having it, but the little bucks are sure trying.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm seeing that. Now, that's down here in Mobile County.
And that's typical around Christmas time, which we're a week away from Christmas.
Right.
You know, so around Christmas time, between Christmas and New Year's, is when you really start seeing a little activity.
I've killed some decent bucks between Christmas and New Year's. And this is something you and I have talked about before, too, that while it doesn't work, I don't think, like it does on the TV shows in the Midwest or whatever with the grunting and rattling or in Texas. But when I've had the best success with rattling and grunting has been, for me, this period from Christmas to New Year's, maybe a little after New Year's.
Before the rut gets started.
Before the rut, And you'll see a lot of people
pre-rut.
Say, I'm gonna haul those antlers out once the rut gets started. At that point, I'm not hauling antlers out. I'm doing that coming up in the next few weeks.
That's right. No, I agree with you.
So if you want to do that.
Not to say that they won't.
No, they have. I mean, I've absolutely had it work.
In the middle of the rut, but I agree with you. I think pre-rut is the best.
Yes, and that's where, you know, we can go down. There's a big debate that goes on social media about lockdown. Once we get in the rut, we'll start talking about this in depth and kind of break down the rut for you. But this lockdown phase where they say, you know, the bucks get locked down with the doe, that's why you're not seeing them. There's periods of time during the rut where you don't see them, although this lockdown thing, we've talked to deer biologists that tell us that in as long of a process as you think it is.
Yeah.
You know, this idea that, so I don't know. But when you talk about just seeing lots of bucks, and maybe we're not talking about the biggest bucks on your property, maybe we are. But for me, that pre-rut, watching cameras, and I watch, I mean, I'm, you know, right now, even though I got some of them down, I'm watching 15 different cell cameras.
Yeah. Okay.
I watch a lot of deer every day.
You're a cell camera junkie, aren't you?
If my wife ever listened to the show, I wouldn't say this, but she doesn't. So if she knew what I spent in batteries, in AA batteries, I'd be moved out. Put it that way. But so this activity for me, and I'm looking at you because, I mean, you've been doing this a lot longer and in places that are the best of the best in Alabama. I see that just lots of bucks just looking and going places. I see more of that in the next 3 weeks than I do maybe during the rut.
The rut usually for us around January the 5th to the 10th on into the end of January, that's when we start seeing some different deer. Like right now.
Same old house deer?
I got seven bucks that are all together.
Right.
And they've been together
I got
all year long, and they're still together, except one of them that died.
That's right.
But the others are all together. And I keep thinking every week, well, I'm going to get these pictures, and you know, I'm going to see them coming in one at a time or something, but they're all still together as of a week ago.
And I'm getting, I don't know if this means anything, I'm not seeing on my cameras, I'm not seeing the group of six bucks together, that kind of stuff. But still, there's some singles, but they're still in twos and threes too. And there's two of them I was looking at this morning. I mean, they may not be the biggest, but two of the oldest bucks on the property. These deer got to be 6-7 years old. Looking at them, they run together like Mo and Curly.
Yeah, you know?
I mean, they're like nothing's up. So I don't know. Hey, we'll ask a guy who has some answers to this, I hope.
Yeah.
Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, Chuck Sykes, joins us next. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all along. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, and an early Merry Christmas to you.
Yes, sir.
Do you think I ought to check my question I had for you earlier with Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama?
I think you should.
All right. So Chuck Sykes is our guest. Chuck, if like with reindeer, if I'm hunting a reindeer, first of all, this time of year, just strategy-wise, am I going to be where I can see a lot of reindeer does, or am I going to get back in the thickets? And second of all, does my bait permit allow me to hunt the reindeer over bait?
Technically, the permit, if you look at the statute, it says white-tailed deer and feral swine.
So no reindeer.
So by the letter of the law, you could not shoot reindeer over bait in Alabama.
See, I won. I need to be out in the open, in the wide open.
Yeah. Mike said they weren't particularly spooky.
No, they're not spooky because you only hunt them one day a year.
Holy cow. Get ready. Fix to be Christmas, and it's the rut's not far off. It's exciting time for deer hunters in the state of Alabama, that's for sure.
It is. It's funny that you bring this up. I actually did an interview with David Rayner earlier in the week, and that's what he wanted to talk about, was getting ready to hunt a rut, you know, down in the southern part of the state. I'm an oddball when it comes to hunting. When I used to hunt a bunch out of state, I always like to go before the rut. I like to hunt my bigger deer when I can pattern them a little bit better. The rut's exciting, and you never know what may show up, but you also get there and they may be locked down, or your deer that you've been watching for 3 months and got on trail camera, he may take a walk about and you never see him again because three neighbors over may kill him during the rut. So
it depends on whether you're shooting with a gun or a bow too, you know, because in the rut, if you're trying to kill one with a bow and he's coming around with a doe, chasing a doe or something, you may not ever get an opportunity. You may be 10 yards from him if you can't shoot him.
Yep.
He's going too fast.
I have been up a tree in Illinois several days.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, physically hollering at deer to stop. And they're zoned in. You can forget it. You could have threw your bow out of the tree at them. They wouldn't slow down.
Yeah, it's funny. We were talking before we got you on. We were talking about this period before the rut. I was kind of saying that, for me, I like to hunt it just because if you want to try to talk to deer, and at least in my my experience, grunting and rattling to some degree, but more grunting. This is when it's worked for me, is this Christmas to maybe the week after New Year's for me.
Yeah, no, I agree. You get in that pre-rut where those deer are out looking. They know it's getting time. They're getting antsy. They're getting excited. The does aren't quite ready, and they're on their feet a little bit more. So, yeah, I agree with you.
Speaking of patterning deer, I want to talk about this as we – I want to talk about overall in the state and talk about some of the things, but I want to get specific to you, Chuck, and what a buck you took earlier this year. Just an incredible buck. Can you tell us about it?
It was honestly, Sean, it's probably the first deer that I have really spent any time trying to hunt in Alabama in a long, long time. I've had trail camera pictures of him since he was 3 and a half. We passed him as a 3-year-old, passed him as a 4-year-old. I actually started hunting him hard last year, had hundreds of trail camera pictures of him, and never saw him, never laid eyes on him.
And he was 5 years last year, right?
He was 5 and a half last year, never saw him. This year, started getting a bunch of trail camera pictures of him, you know, as early as June and July, and that's the deer that I'd set my sights on. I didn't think I would ever see him, but I'd use trail cameras, use a little common sense, and was lucky enough to get him. And, you know, it was a 6 and a half year old deer, free range deer in Alabama on small acreage. He scored 146 and some change and weighed 200 pounds. And I'm as proud of that deer as any deer that I've ever killed, because we grew him and we passed him. We took chances that the neighbors weren't going to shoot him. We took chances that historic floods for the past couple of years didn't relocate him or him die post-rut, you know, and it worked. It panned out. So I'm ecstatic.
And that's the thing. You're not going to kill a 146 in Alabama if you kill him at a 120, you know?
Exactly.
You just got to let him go.
When he was a 3-year-old, he was a 115-inch deer.
Yeah.
When he was a 4-year-old, he was like 120. Well, when he was a 5, he was high 120s, low 130s. And I had made my mind up at that point, you know, if you can get a deer to 5 years old, I don't really care what he scores. That's a trophy.
That's right.
And I hunted him last year and could not kill him. So now I'm really grateful that I didn't. But talking about hunting the pre-rut or before the rut, that deer, the property's roughly 1,000 acres. I had never seen him on the west side of the property. He always lived on the east side next to the river, never left more than 300 acres. I killed him a half a mile from where he lived for 6 years.
Now, what the heck? I mean, if you told me that during the rut, we'd all be like, okay, yeah, sure, that makes sense. But what the heck does he move? Because doesn't the studies show that the older they get, the tighter their home range gets?
Yeah, but there's a lot of factors. And I'm guessing, but all during the summer, another 5-year-old moved in and was running around with him all summer. And honestly, I think that 5-year-old was a bigger bodied deer. He didn't score as much, but he was younger. He was stronger. And I think he pushed him out. I think when they got hard horned and started doing some posturing and stuff, that 5-year-old made him pack up and head somewhere else.
He said, that's not worth this.
That's logical.
That's right.
And that's more than likely exactly what happened.
That's
And he still, I only had 3 pictures of him from like October the 20th till the day I killed him. And he had moved that far and I would only get 1 picture of him every 2 weeks.
Wow.
But I looked up. I guessed right. I guessed where he was going to be, and I was there and killed him on a food plot. He came out at 4:10.
This is when Chuck just pours salt in all my wounds.
Yeah.
I'm back in some briar thicket. Chuck said, yeah, about 4:10 he comes out in the patch.
Yeah.
Yep, with a little 2-year-old 6-point. Yeah.
Somebody you could beat up.
Yeah, you don't ever know. I mean, that's why you just got to go when you can go, you know, no matter what the weather is.
I did my homework. I had an idea of where he was. I waited until the wind got right, and I took a chance.
Yeah. And that's one thing, I guess, in a way, that cameras do help, because it allowed you, you've been seeing this deer for several years, and you knew it was the same deer, and you said, you know, if I let him go one more year, he's going to be better, you know?
Yep.
So I think that helps when you know he's hanging around. He's not running off. So I think the cameras help some on that.
They definitely do. And, you know, we do, like y'all, when you was talking in the break, taking grandson's friends, and we do a lot of entertaining and take a lot of people hunting. So I can take my trail camera pictures, and I sent this to Sean. Mm-hmm. I put together a yes, you can shoot this list, or a no, you will never be invited back list.
Yeah.
If you shoot this deer.
Yeah.
And that way people can sit there and look at it. We actually print hard copies of it. They take it hunting with them. And if they get a glimpse of a deer, they don't get so excited that they shoot without thinking. And it saves a bunch of those young deer. That's like, oh, wow, yes, that's so-and-so. I remember him. Boy, he's pretty. He's a three-year-old.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more just on my side. And I run a bunch of cell cameras, and it keeps me from having the – I get, oh, wow, even though I see bucks that I'm not going to shoot, that I still get excited when I see them. They pop out. I think I was texting Chuck the other day when I was watching a buck. But they don't get shot because when they come out, I already know
who
that
they
deer.
Are.
I know that yeah. deer, and I can't put together, maybe as I had in my past in years, where you put something together in your head that says, that deer's big. He's big. You know, you come up with the whole formula in your head why you need to shoot this deer. When I've seen that deer a few times, it takes some of the sizzle away. It's still exciting. Every buck I see in the woods, I still get excited. But I don't feel like how I got to shoot this deer.
Well, you've already determined that before you ever got out in the woods.
Right.
It's not like, well that's the first time I saw him.
Example, I had a friend hunting with me this weekend, and we've got a three-year-old that's an absolute superstar. He's probably the best deer that we've ever had on the place. He's got 10-inch brow tines. He's real heavy. He'll probably score 125 right now as a three-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day, we would have clipped him as soon as you saw him.
Mm-hmm.
But I sat down with my guests, showed them pictures. I said, look, this deer is going to look huge, but look at his body. Don't look at his rack. And I get a text from one of the guys one morning. He said, man, I am looking at the deer's name's Haynes. He said, I'm looking at Haynes. Man, what a beautiful animal. And instead of getting freaked out and trying to shoot, he got to watch him for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So he had just as much fun watching that deer, because you don't get to see a deer like that often. Usually, as soon as you see something like that, you're trying to get the gun on it and shoot it.
Yep.
You can't enjoy just watching them.
Well, typically in Alabama, too, a 125, 130 class buck is a very nice buck. And most people would shoot a 125, 130 class buck in Alabama.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't fault anybody for doing it. It's just, we're trying to do better, and I'm working with the neighbors. I'm sending the neighbors all these pictures and saying, I can assure you, we are not going to shoot this deer, because that's usually the way it goes. Well, if I don't kill it, the neighbor's going to kill it, so I might as well just go ahead and kill it.
Yeah.
So I'm working with the neighbors, and, I mean, good gracious, it's paying dividends.
And I want y'all to listen to what Chuck's saying, because, it was like an epiphany moment for me, because normally you would say, I'm not sharing pictures of what we got with anybody. I don't want them to know what we've got. But in fact, it's the opposite that gives you a chance to protect those deer. I think it's a novel approach to things for sure.
Well, and in that list, I've got, you know, 8 or 10 deer that you definitely, you know, pretty 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds and even a couple of good 4-year-olds. But then again, you've got some that as soon as you see them, it's like, hey, here's old so-and-so. He's 5 and a half and he's a piece of junk. We want to kill him. So it's not like we're saying don't shoot anything. There's still a group of these deer that, hey man, if you see them, more power to you, but just save this one because he could look like this big deer next year.
There it is. We'll talk more about this when we return. Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, our guest Chuck Sykes, right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. So, I mean, if I have a feeder out, then it's a no-go on reindeer.
Yeah, can't shoot over. Can't shoot reindeer over feed in Alabama.
Okay. All right.
You heard it from the
man. So, Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, Chuck Sykes, on with us. So, duly noted. I'm not going to mess that up. All right. I want to talk about an experience I had this last week and use this as a way to get in the conversation about what we've talked about for the last couple months here on the show, but new things and, you know, old dogs and new tricks and all that kind of stuff we got to do about game check. And I went, it was earlier this week, I'd killed a doe on Sunday, and I was taking my first deer I killed this year, actually.
Yeah.
I've been having guests shoot does, and then I realized they weren't doing a great job at it, and I was about, I don't know, 15 behind what I need to shoot. So I shot one, take it up there, quartered it out, took it up there, and the person behind the counter said, hey.
Took it up to the processor.
Processor, yep. Okay. Talked to the processor, and he said, hey, Mr. Sean, because they know me there. He said, Mr. Hate to ask you this, but you got to have a, you got to have a number here that goes with this deer. And he had a form right there. I said, huh, funny you should ask. Here's my number on my game check. And his eyes lit up. So I don't know how many people he had to walk through that in the past, but at least
like a lot of them.
He had a good success with it, Chuck. So on that one occasion.
Well, good, good. And I, before you brought this up, I was going to comment on how much I had enjoyed the first section of this interview. Because there was no policy, there was no problem. We were talking about deer management. We were talking about hunting. We were talking about enjoyment of the outdoors. So.
And then here comes Sullivan in with the policy. Yeah, I know.
But at least it was a good policy thing. So yeah. That's good.
Yeah, and it was positive. In that, and I can tell you that, you know, we talked to one processor last week, and I can tell you that the processor I was at this week, these two are absolutely compliant, and they both have said, hey, we're here to help the people. If we need to help teach them how to do this and get the number and all that, then all the better. So, you know, it's a positive thing there. I mean, and let's talk about that. Game check, I mean, we can go back to remedial game check here. And what Mike and I always tell people, not just bucks.
Got to do the does, too.
Yeah, and that's what people are finding out, right?
Yeah, you know, you got to check everything. It doesn't do us a whole lot of good just to know about the bucks. We got to know everything. We've got to try to get the herd ratios right, get the sex ratio balanced, and we just need to know what's going on.
And we talked to a boy that owns Skinner Processing, where he cleans deer mainly, but that's one thing that he did say. He says, you know, when somebody does bring one in that's never didn't know that you had to do that, they'll stop right then and help them get the number they need to get and all that. And that's what it's going to take the first year or two.
He also said, remember, he was given, like, people could come by before they hunted, and hey, the people that worked there, Skinners, would get their phone and set them up with the app. So
that's entrepreneurship. I know one processor that they're doing a VIP service. You pay them $10 or $20 for the year. You come in, drop your deer off, they've already got your information, and they do everything for you.
That is entrepreneurship.
It is. That's making it work. That's providing a service to your customers.
I'm a DIY guy, and I can do it, but I see that for some people it's a good thing. But I want to. You said something. I want people to understand it. You said we need the information. The sex ratio. We don't just need the bucks. We need the does. What does that look like? I know that there's a in-depth scientific discussion, but just for a layman, that data means what to y'all at DCNR?
Okay. I'm going to put it on a more reasonable level.
Okay.
The first part of this show, we talked about me personally managing 1,000 acres. Mm-hmm. I inventory what I have on my bucks and my does. I set requirements for the people hunting with me. We need to kill X number of bucks. We need to kill X number of does. We take body weights. We take antler measurements. That way we know if my management plan is working. If I didn't know that in the past 15 years, the largest deer to come off the place weighed 200 pounds and scored 126, I wouldn't be nearly as excited about a 230-pound, 135-inch deer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but I've got records that I can look, I can gauge how well my management is going. Well, we're trying to do that on a statewide basis. We can't get into all of the herd dynamics, but we can at least try to get a good number of deer where we can look at the numbers of hunters that we have yearly, and we can look at how many deer they're killing yearly, and we can see, hey, man, if the number of hunters stay the same, but the harvest drops by 20%, we may have a problem because people are still out there hunting. They're hunting as much, and they're not killing as many. There may not be that many out there for them to kill.
Right.
Or vice versa. If same number of hunters, they kill twice as many, then we may need to increase the bag limit because we may have too many. We need to open up more opportunities.
Yeah, without knowing what they're killing, you don't know. You have no idea. You can't make a judgment. Yeah, I agree.
So that's why when you have that app and you white belly old nanny, even, you know, not just bucks, it takes 2 seconds to get that thing put in. And if you're going to drop it off to taxidermist, you're going to give it to your cousin. If you're going to take it to the processor, you got to have that number. So
I mean, I gave one to a friend of mine the other day, and I had to, you know, I gave him the number so that when you took it to the processor, you'd have a number. If he would have taken it to the processor, they wouldn't take it. So, he got to have that number for it.
Just try.
I know it's something different. It's been on the books for a while, but we're just making it a little more prominent now. And I know it's different, and I know some people don't like it just because they don't want to like it. But just give it a chance. I mean, the $3 limit, people thought the sky was falling. Don't ruin hunting in Alabama with the $3 limit and look at what it's done.
Yep. And I think that's an interesting discussion. That's the snowball effect, I call it, because you got people hollering about it at first. I understand it ain't changed. We're all humans.
People
we don't
used
like change.
Killing 15, 20, 30
right.
deer a year.
But once all of a sudden they started seeing that average buck size grow, I kind of heard that the hollering settled down, Chuck.
For the most part, there's one in every crowd.
Sure.
But, for the most part, you would have to be blind not to see what it's done for the deer herd in Alabama. I mean, we have seen some monsters come off of public land this year.
That's what I was fixing to ask you. I mean, I watch y'all's Facebook page and all that, and there was one came the other day. Was it 14 point? It was insane, this buck.
Yeah, that deer came off of Cahaba, right outside of Helena up there, just south of Birmingham. And, you don't think of that as a big buck mecca. When you think of public land deer, you think in Bankhead or something like that, or Black Warrior. But good gracious, this thing was, he's probably in the 160s.
Is it? I'll show Mike.
Public land.
Yeah. Incredible buck. And, what also impressed me was, yes, that big giant buck there, but I was looking at pictures where the other bucks, I guess, killed on the same hunt or whatever. There were a bunch of just great rack bucks there.
Yeah, good 4, 5, 6-year-old deer that, just a good Alabama 115 to 120 inch deer.
Public land.
That's a good deer. I have been, as the director, I have been consulting for a place for as part of our technical assistance team for 7 years. Tremendous genetics, tremendous property, unbelievable. And one of the members asked me the other day, he said, look, we've been doing this 7 years. I don't understand why we're not killing 5 to 10 150-inch deer each year. We're just killing one. Because you're not in Illinois and Iowa.
Yeah.
One deer in the 150s in Alabama every year, that is a humongous accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
Most Alabama deer never get over 115 or 120. That's just what they are.
You're right.
But with good management, if you can take that 120-inch deer to 130-inch deer, that's huge. You can't compare us to Illinois and Iowa. We don't have the genetics. We don't have the food. We don't have the soil.
That's
never going to happen.
That's important. Because, I mean, it'd be just ignorance, or maybe we all, I'm pointing at myself, watch too many shows that are filmed in the Midwest or whatever, we get this idea.
Unrealistic expectations.
You're right.
Yeah.
Destroy a lot of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't appreciate what you have because you're expecting. And so it's not that we can't produce. Obviously, it's showing here the trophy class buck, but maybe we shouldn't expect the density of some of those other regions of those those bucks.
It's just not going to happen.
Chuck, it's like the deer. It's like the deer you killed this year. We talked about it before we even got on the air today. You know, you killed a 146. Is that what?
Yeah.
You know, a deer that scored 146 in Alabama. That is a deer of a lifetime. Anything really over 130, if you have a chance to kill. I would say a majority of a lot of my friends have never killed a 130 in Alabama.
My hand's up.
Sean's
one. I'm one of them.
Yeah.
I'm one of them.
So, and
look,
John has been hunting all his life.
I've hunted Choctaw County for 43 years. You know how many I put my hands on?
I mean,
one.
And that's
that
one.
Was him.
Yeah, that was him. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying, you know, and with some tutelage from Chuck as well, just, you know, I've gotten to where I look at age and bellies more than I do antlers. But, yeah, I mean, it's about the antlers. I want to shoot a deer that's, yeah, I think the biggest deer I kill is 124 or something. You know, I've never shot 130-class deer in Alabama. Never shot a 130-class whitetail, period.
Yeah.
So that's my, you know, that's my goal. I'd like to break that, and it looks like a better chance to do that than in my past 48 years.
Yeah.
And it's never too late. I proved it this year. It's never too late.
That's right.
By the way, too, I just want to make sure, y'all, once you get stopped, if you're riding down the road or if you're already at the house or whatever, if you go to Facebook, go to Alabama Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries Division on Facebook, and you'll see the picture here of this buck. I think it's posted up on the 13th of December. I mean, it's just this is a public land deer, y'all.
He is awesome. I'm looking at the picture of
it. It is a beautiful buck, man. It is something. It is something.
Yeah, it's as pretty a deer as you'd ever want to look at. And you know how much it cost him to kill that deer?
How much?
Less than $50.
Yep. Absolutely.
He had an Alabama hunting license and a WMA permit. Yeah. He didn't have lease costs. He didn't have a feed bill at the co-op. He didn't have to plant food plots. He bought a WMA license and an Alabama hunting license, and he went hunting.
Well, it cost him some gas money.
He probably rode with a buddy. Speaking of public hunting opportunities in the state, where are we? Well, I can tell you this, just anecdote. A buddy of mine was drawn for Portland Landing. I could not go. I took my trip to Colorado at that time. When I talked to him after he got back from there, he said, and I know people are going to say, shut up, Sullivan. Man, because I know there's other places just as good, but he said it was absolutely incredible. He said the number of older age class deer that he saw regularly over his hunt was something. It was a bow hunt he was on. He said it was incredible. So
did he do any good?
He didn't kill one. But he sent me pictures of 110-inch deer right underneath his tree.
Yeah,
he didn't shoot. So he said he saw some. So I mean, I don't want to get everybody to go to one spot, but I mean that was one of them. So that's an SOA. Can you kind of talk about SOAs for those that are still ignorant to that and how they work?
Yes, just special opportunity areas, and when we were able to buy these smaller tracts like Portland, which when we bought it, you know, it was around 5,000 acres. We broke it down into units from 300 to 500 acres, and it's like a draw system out west. I mean, you're used to doing it out west. You put in, apply for tags in certain areas. The same thing for this, and if you get drawn, your buddy got to take one person with him, and they had that 500-acre block for the three-day hunt. Nobody was in it but them, and it was theirs to hunt. So it's a unique opportunity.
Now,
and they kill some really fine bucks off of that too every year, don't they?
Oh yeah. But like Sean said, even more important than killing is they're getting a quality hunt, and they're seeing deer. They're seeing turkeys. They're seeing hogs. It's just an enjoyable weather. You know, he didn't kill anything, but it's probably one of the best hunts he's going to be on all year.
Oh, yeah. He said by far. He said it was, what did he say? He said that place was stupid with bucks, I think is the term he used. It was good. But we're going to run to the news break, come right back. More with Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, our guest Chuck Sykes. And we'll get a few more questions in here and talk about, what we were talking about at the beginning, the fact that We're in pre-rut. Even
time to get your grunt and the rattlers out.
That is correct.
Yep.
We'll get some pointers when we return. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Just a minute or two left here with our guest director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries and recent Alabama bruiser buck killer, Chuck Sykes. So you're done for the year, right? You're cooking?
I'm pretty much camp cook, and I'm probably going to have to shoot a couple of does just to put in the freezer. But, yeah, other than that, I'm done. A buck is safe in front of me this year.
You've got a heck of one there. Also, we talked a little bit, and we just got about a minute here, about this pre-rut period. For you, where do you consider us in pre-rut, and when do you consider that transition into rut? Like, how far out?
Right now, in your part of the world, it's, you know, that first week of January after Christmas. Some of those younger deer especially are going to start cruising around. But I don't really get excited about the rut down in our part of the world till the 15th to the 20th of January, and then that's when things start rocking along.
You're exactly right.
And
that's a big date.
Ready for it, for sure. And hopefully people get out there and get some of the pre-rut hunting in. Where, like, and you made a good point. As much as we all think rut, I'm still obsessed with wide open rut, but you make a good point. That deck gets shuffled, deer get moved. You can't pattern. I mean, other than patterning does.
You find the women, you hunt the does, hope for the best.
Yeah, it's right. I mean, there's no.
That is right.
I'm thinking about it because my strategy during the rut's never. It's this buck. I'm saying, hey, if y'all hunt right here, there's a passel of does in there. That's always what. I'm hunting the does.
That's what they're looking for. Yeah.
Good point. Good point.
Well, one thing we want to talk about, too, real quick before we get off, you know, you want to make sure if you do shoot a deer that you register it, and that if you're going to be hunting over a corn pile, you need to have a permit for that. There's still people that don't know that, too, because I talk to them all the time. If you're hunting over corn, you're supposed to have a permit to do that.
Still, every Monday, I get a report from my law enforcement section of what citations, violations, warnings, contacts that were made over the previous week, week in and week out. Night hunting and hunting over bait are two of the top most cited violations.
Yeah. And one of them, if you do right, is not illegal.
And most of the ones that's hunting over bait know about the baiting license.
Yeah.
They just don't chose do not to do it.
Yeah. There you go. Well, then at that point, can't help you. That information's all online. As always, we appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Thank you, Chuck.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, Chuck Sykes, our guest. We're on the way out of here, but Prep Sports Report on the way in. Won't see y'all before Christmas, so Merry Christmas. We'll talk after that. Hopefully Santa brings you 130-class buck.
If there's any reindeer left.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be reindeer hunting, but not over bait.